I bet everyone listening today has been touched in some way by cancer. I know I have. Unfortunately, sometimes the fear of cancer makes us, especially men, I guess, less likely to be screened. But the truth is that early detection is often the difference between beating cancer or not, and the screening for head and neck cancer is so fast, easy, and painless that there's really no excuse to avoid it, as a matter of fact. And maybe during the break at noon today, I'm going to have our guest do a quick and check on me. Dr. Aaron Wieland, our guest, otolaryngologist, head neck surgeon with UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Wieland, welcome back. It is great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Well,
thank you. Thanks for having me. It's a timely presentation given that April is Head Neck Cancer Awareness Month, so we appreciate this opportunity.
Wow. And, you know, is it a has it happened to a lot of people?
It's not the most common cancer, for sure. In fact, it's rather low on the list of cancers in the United States, but it's one that has a pretty dramatic impact on patients' lives. And a certain type that involves the tonsils and the back of the tongue has become more prevalent over the last 10 or 15 years, and we don't see that trend changing in the near future.
And I've heard there's been an increase in oral cancer caused by human papilloma virus. Is
that
true?
That's right. Yeah, the human papilloma virus, or commonly referred to as HPV, which has been known to be very important for the development of cervical cancer in women, has actually been shown to be involved in cancers of the tonsils and what we call the base of the tongue, so the back of the tongue that is difficult to see. And those are the ones that are on the rise.
So, an HPV, again, for those, somebody's going to say, well, what the heck is that, human papilloma virus?
Yeah, HPV is a very common virus. There are more than 170 different types. It's the virus that causes common plantar warts on your feet or your hands. It's the virus associated with genital warts, and it's also certain strains of it have been shown to cause cervical cancers, anogenital cancers, and now this group of head and neck cancers.
I have an 11-year-old daughter who's going through a series of shots for this. And I imagine you're recommending that HPV vaccine?
We are, yeah. So the HPV vaccine was first approved in 2006 for girls and young women, and then in 2009 for boys and young men. It has never been shown. It's important to say it's never been shown to definitely prevent cancers of the tonsil and the base of tongue, but it targets the very viruses that we know cause them. So it stands to reason that this is going to do a great deal as it relates to the incidence of these cancers.
Talking today with Dr. Aaron Wieland, otolaryngologist, a head and neck surgeon with UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Great to have him along today as we talk about detecting and treating head and neck cancer. Maybe you know somebody who suffered from it, or maybe it's something that you feel like you'd like to learn a little more about. Certainly give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can post your questions or your comments there. So other than the HPV, are there identified causes or risk factors for it?
Yeah, the most important risk factor, even in this new era of the HPV infection, remains tobacco and alcohol.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah, and last year marked the 50th anniversary of the Surgeon General Luther Terry's report, which showed established commonly the tobacco as a risk factor for lung and for laryngeal cancer. So with that, there has been strides made as it relates to decrease in the incidence of smoking. And the tumors of the head and neck that are traditionally associated with smoking have been decreasing ever so slightly But the tumors of the tonsil and the back of the tongue related to this virus have been
going the other direction.
The opposite direction, that's right.
Yeah, that's too bad. Is there a particular age when people are more affected by head and neck cancer than, I mean, young, old, middle?
Yeah, traditionally those individuals who have used tobacco and perhaps consumed a lot of alcohol would develop cancers in their 6th, 7th decade, so usually a bit older, but of course that there are exceptions to that. We're finding that with these HPV-related tumors, the patients tend to be younger, and again, they often have no smoking history, so we're seeing many patients in their 5th and early part of the 6th decades.
Boy, and survival rates on it?
That's the silver lining to this, if you will. The survival rates for these tumors associated with the virus are at least double, so they're much better. And we usually quote patients, upwards of an 80 or a 90% cure rate for these, which for solid cancers is very good.
Wow. Are there... Must be some warning signs. I hope there are some warning signs. Are there?
There are some warning signs, and I was listening to your introduction and thinking that as much as we value screening, I wish we had a surefire, simple way to screen in the same way we do for other things like cervical cancer. But yes, warning signs. The typical symptom for these cancers often is a neck mass because the tumor in the tonsil may be very, very small. It may not even be able to be seen by the doctor, but the patient may develop an enlarged lymph node, and so a neck mass that often is not painful, but certainly has not been there. Certainly, problems with swallowing, pain, unexplained weight loss, all of these things can also lead you toward this as a possibility.
Well, we have some questions coming up. Let's go to the phones. Jane in Kaukauna, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, my name is Jane. Now you've given me another question to ask. My first question was, with the increased prevalence of what I'm hearing anyway, of young girls having oral sex with boys because they don't think that it's really having sex, will we be seeing more of the girls having these cancers later on? And my other question was, as far as other cancers, is throat clearing sometimes going to be a something that can be a symptom of this, where you're going a lot.
Oh, throat clearing.
There might be some for the vocal cord issue. I know they're finding some of that with, they're calling it LERD, like laryngeal esophageal reflux.
Yeah,
and then it can sometimes lead to the Barrett's esophagus and that sort of thing. So I was just wondering. Thank you.
Good questions. Thanks a lot for calling.
Those are very good questions. To answer your first question, which is a very good one, there is some thought that these changing perceptions of what constitutes safe sex and the increased prevalence of oral sex may be driving some of the rise in these virally related cancers. Interestingly, there's a dramatic difference between men and women being afflicted with these cancers. And if you look at men and women and having these cancers of the tonsil and the base of tongue related to the virus, for women, it's going up very, very, very little. It is going up, but for men, it's going up dramatically. So there is some kind of a gender difference as it relates to getting these cancers, and there have been a number of hypotheses as to why that might be, but it's not well established yet. We know that women clear the virus more quickly than men, but again, the reason for that is not perfectly clear. As it relates to your second question, throat clearing can be a symptom of something like this. Fortunately, there are a lot of other reasons that we often clear our throats, and you touched on a big one, which is acid reflux. And while we know that acid reflux can be associated with esophageal cancer, the data for its association with cancers of the voice box is not nearly as strong. It may ever so slightly increase your risk of developing a tumor of your vocal cords, it's not nearly in the same way that we see it with esophageal cancer. But just one last thing I would say is that oftentimes the throat symptoms for these tumors are quite vague. And there have been a number of kind of high-profile individuals who have had these cancers, and they presented to multiple doctors over a long period of time. And the reason is that the symptoms can be very similar to a common cold, a laryngitis that just doesn't go away, reflux. And so if something persists for weeks to a month or two, it probably warrants an evaluation.
Peter in La Crosse up next. Hi, Peter.
Hi. I'm a veteran who was recently treated at the UW Medical for removal of what was originally diagnosed as reflux, a silent reflux, and but then was they took a sample and found out that it was papillomavirus. So those were removed at UW-Madison. My question for the doctor is, am I at increased risk of developing tonsil or base of tongue cancer because of these papillomas that just lumps on my vocal cords?
Yeah.
Yeah, good question.
Yeah, it is a good question. So the papillomas that we see on the vocal cords are caused by a different strain of the virus that has a very, very low chance of ever turning into a cancer. The fact is that we're almost all exposed in one way or another to this virus, and it's certainly possible that that you've had exposures to the virus types that can lead to other problems. But having had the papillomas by themselves is not a significant risk factor for developing a tumor of the tonsil or the base of tongue.
Okay, a follow-up question, Doctor?
Sure, go ahead.
What are the screening procedures? I mean, should I be more proactive with screening?
So that's a good question, and I wish we had a better screening procedure in the same way that we do for, again, as I mentioned earlier, for something like cervical cancer. I think the best thing to do is to periodically just try to look into your mouth and look at the back of your throat and just get a sense of what normal is for you now. The other thing that I think is very valuable is we owe a great deal to our dental colleagues who are doing a lot of screenings whenever they even just do a routine cleaning. And so getting routine dental checkups is another way to get kind of a magnified view of your mouth and have someone else take a look at it.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. Those were all really good questions. And even Michael Douglas, I don't think, was diagnosed very early. It was a while before they caught it.
Yeah, that was kind of the person that I was referencing with the sort of high-profile case. Exactly. He had seen a number of different doctors, and it can be difficult to find these when they're early because the symptoms are rather vague.
And we'll talk some more about that. We'll take a quick look at the news and the weather and find out what else is in store for us here on the IdeasNet. And then we'll be back with Dr. Aaron Wieland of the University of Wisconsin. You stay with us. Often the fear of getting bad news keeps us from getting the medical attention we need, but it's so much better to get checked. And if there's anything to worry about, you know, we need to look into it. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today. Talking about head and neck cancer. And really pleased to have with us Dr. Aaron Wieland, who's an otolaryngologist at the University of Wisconsin Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. And Dr. Wieland, thank you again for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You may have a question or comment or maybe an experience to share. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. And I want to mention that there is free oral head and neck cancer screening going on now as part of Head and Neck Cancer Awareness Month.
That's right. We're hosting an event at the University of Wisconsin Hospital on April 17th. That runs from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. No appointment necessary. And this is going to be in the Ear, Nose, and Throat Clinic. I think there's some information on
our Facebook page. Yes.
Yes. I can give a phone number if people wish to call with any further information on it. That's 608 865-6260. But we've offered this for a number of years, it's been a good event to raise awareness.
Yeah, and so 10 to 1, Friday, April 17th, it's at UW Hospitals and Clinics in the atrium, part of it on second floor.
Second floor, that's right.
Yeah, so really you don't have to register, you just parking is there, available, and free, isn't it?
That's right. Parking will be validated, yeah.
Yeah, so that's just a wonderful opportunity, so I hope you'll take advantage of it. And again, we even have sort of directions on how to get there and so forth up on our Facebook page. So go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post your or take a look there and find out a little bit more about the free oral head and neck cancer screening. You mentioned earlier dentists sometimes have helped you out, and here we had a Facebook comment from Jenny who said, "Our dentist discovered my husband's stage 4 throat cancer and saved his life. My husband had smoked for 34 years, quitting 3 years before the cancer was detected. We can't say enough about the treatment he received at Mayo Rochester."
Yeah, we're very fortunate that dentists are keenly aware of the development of abnormal lesions and tumors and things in the mouth and are paying attention to these things and are often the early discoverers of these problems.
And one more Facebook question before we go to the phones, and Bob and Dina, we'll get to you in just a second. But Facebook question from Daniel: "I was a heavy tobacco user as a young man, both cigarettes and chewing tobacco. I quit 20 plus years ago. Of course, getting tested regularly is important, but is there some mathematical formula that would suggest how much my risk of getting cancer are reduced by quitting when I did over 20 years ago?"
That's a great question. There was kind of an interesting study that was done in Italy that looked at a number of heavy smokers and then looked at their risks of developing cancers related to how long ago they had quit. And the risk doesn't go back to the same as somebody who never smoked, but by 20 to 30 years, the risk of developing a cancer from the smoking in the past is only marginally more than somebody who had never smoked. I don't know of a very specific mathematical formula, but they were attempting to address that in this study.
Yeah, and no talking to other doctors that will say, and you know what, it starts getting better the minute essentially, as soon as you quit, things start getting a little better.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. For smoking, we see it often just with sense of taste and smell, and they can come back to better than they were when someone was smoking within a few days, even. So things change quickly.
Bob and Krivitz, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hello. Good morning. I have Barrett's disease right now. Okay, I'm 69 years of age. And I had acid reflux surgery the first time, I would say about 30 years ago. I've had 3 different surgeries for it, I still have the same problem, but not as severe since the surgery. But now it has changed into Barrett's disease about 15, 20 years ago. And I am treated at Frederick Hospital regularly. It used to be every year we'd go down and see if I had any polyps and take care of them. Okay, now I have had about 2 years without any polyps, and so he's moved it up to almost 3 years, I guess, without it. So now we're going to go up to 2 years. Is this more of a risk for me, or should I insist on going every year? And then the other part of it is, okay, I do get to that point where I cannot speak very well, okay, where my voice fades out completely because of this. And then with eating, okay, my esophagus has slowed down enough now where one day I can go out and have, a chicken dinner and eat the whole thing, and the next day I can go out and eat 2 bites of chicken and I can't swallow. Okay, and because, as you know, once I've had these surgeries, it's impossible to vomit or get rid of this.
Oh.
Yeah, so as it relates to the reflux and your risk of developing something outside of the esophagus, head and neck cancer, for example, the endoscopies that you're having aren't really looking at your vocal cords, but the the thing is that you would experience a change in voice that wouldn't go away. So you described that your voice sometimes gets weak. But if that were to persist, then that would warrant an evaluation more urgently. The risk that you may have for developing something in your vocal cords is really just very, very minimally elevated. And I think that the screening endoscopies that you're getting, I would defer to your gastroenterologist about the frequency of those.
Mm. Okay, great. Thank you, Bob, for calling. Appreciate your call. We were talking about the head and neck screening that's going on at the University of Wisconsin, and I wanted to mention as well that Judith has put up on our Facebook page something that a site you can go to that will show you a screening that's near where you live. So if you're not in the Madison area or the immediate areas of the university hospitals and clinics, if you go to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and you'll find that screening, a place where you can click on and find a screening that may be near you, be it Milwaukee or Green Bay or wherever. So I did want to mention that. And Dina in DeForest up next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, it's actually Deanna.
So. Deanna, so, thank you.
Hi, Larry and Dr. Whelan. Thank you for doing this program.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to say that my daughter was diagnosed at the age of 27. She had mucoepidermoid carcinoma in her parotid gland, and she had a lump in front of her ear for about 2 years. And she had several doctors looked at it, and they all said it was a cyst that's very common right there. She finally asked to see a specialist when she had trouble. She had paralysis in her face. And she went in, and she saw the specialist, and it took the specialist about 2 minutes to say, oh, that's not a cyst. And they pursued it, and it was already stage 4. It had already gone into her facial nerve, her mastoid bone, and her lymph nodes by the time they diagnosed it. So she kind of did everything right by going in and having it looked at. And I guess my question is, and I will say that she had absolutely no risk factors. So I don't think that, like they say, they weren't looking for the zebra. She was never a smoker. She didn't have the HH the virus. She was an athlete, very healthy, no risk factors, just the one symptom. So how often is it actually a cyst versus something more serious?
You're referring to something in the parotid gland specifically?
Right.
Yeah. Well, cysts are probably more common than a mucoepidermoid carcinoma, but typically if we were to find a mass in the parotid gland, we would start with some kind of imaging study, whether that be an ultrasound or a CAT scan, to try to get a little bit more information about it, because these can be present for quite a while before they lead to any symptoms, as I think your daughter likely experienced. And sometimes we, when somebody's young and healthy, it's not always the first thing you think of having some kind of a cancer like the mucoepidermoid that she had.
Pull through it okay?
She is. She's doing very well. She went through some pretty drastic surgery and radiation, but she's 4 years out from diagnosis, and she's doing very well. Thank you.
Oh, that's wonderful. That is wonderful news.
Yes.
Thanks, Deanna. I appreciate your call. And it is, I guess getting a second opinion isn't a bad idea either.
No, not at all. We certainly encourage it with our patients as well. If they're wanting more information, to get another opinion is never a bad thing, and your clinician should never in any way be offended by that. It's a natural to want to get as much information as you can.
Absolutely. You can join in too, by the way, as we visit about detecting and treating head and neck cancers with our guest, Dr. Aaron Wieland of the University of Wisconsin Hospitals. He's an otolaryngologist, head and neck surgeon. Wonderful to have him along. And again, the number for you to call to join in, 1-800 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Let's turn to Mary in La Crosse next. Hi, Mary. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Mine is really a tale of two cities. A year ago last October, my nephew, my 55-year-old nephew in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, called to tell me that he had this kind of cancer. And and how it was discovered, he had just was in for a regular appointment, and the doctor said, "Is there anything else you want to ask about?" And he said, "Yes, I have this lump." And at first, they just put him on an antibiotic, and when that didn't make any change, they sent him to the cancer specialist wherever in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and they diagnosed it as that. And at the same time, my next-door neighbor had told me that her son-in-law was diagnosed with the very same thing, and he was in Alabama, and but they were decided to do the herbal route. Well, my nephew went through chemo and radiation, and it was absolutely horrible. It had to be tube fed for a while because of the burning in the throat, but he went through all of the treatments, and including the being tube fed for a while, and he has been pronounced at this point in time completely cured. While my neighbor's son-in-law moved up here a few weeks ago, and I've seen people with cancer on the inside dying, and you can't see it. And when I saw this gentleman with the cancer outside on the side of his face and head, I couldn't believe it, and they're still thinking that they did the right thing going the herbal route. And I just want to say I am so grateful for the cancer centers and for people who honest and truly trust the medical people and go through that medical route, because I'm so grateful that my nephew is cured and to have him with us.
Sorry to hear for your neighbor's son-in-law. It's such a difficult decision about what treatments to undertake, and I can imagine the turmoil that he must have been going through. And I think your story highlights a couple of things. One is that that this is primarily a disease of men more than women that we're seeing, and a second is that while the cure rate can be very, very good with conventional treatments, they're really tough to get through, and it takes a team of swallowing therapists and nutritionists and internists to really help get a patient through chemotherapy and radiation. But once they get through, they do have a very good chance of being free of this
and living a long life. Yeah, thanks, Mary. I appreciate the call. I want to give Stan in West Allis a chance to join in. Stanley, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. Yes, I'm 76 years old, and I have just lately, I would say the last 2 maybe to 3 months, I've had in my throat, right, you know, where your Adam's apple is and you swallow and it goes up and down. If I drink just regular, like liquids, I don't have any trouble. It goes down real easy. But if I were to eat something like a hamburger on a bun or something, I have to swallow 2 or 3 times to get it to go down. And I don't feel any pain or anything, but it just seems like there's a kind of a constriction in there.
Yeah, that's certainly not terribly uncommon, and usually what we would do for those types of symptoms is to start with a swallowing study with one of the speech and swallow therapists, and they look at how the muscles of swallowing are functioning, whether certain types of foods and liquids, as you mentioned, are tending to cause troubles, and that's usually our initial point of workup, is to try to better understand where the difficulty lies in a swallowing study. So that might be something that you mentioned to your primary care physician to kind of get plugged in for something like that.
Yeah. Primary doctor first, and have him take a look at it.
I'm sorry.
I was wondering if should he go to the primary first and have him.
Yeah, exactly. That I describe the symptoms to them, and they can have a look at your examination and proceed from there, likely with what would be a swallowing study.
There you go. Good luck, Stanley. Thank you, Jean in Ashland County. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I'm interested in prevention, and I have heard that the vaccines for human papillomavirus only cover about 4 variations, and the doctor, your guest, I believe, mentioned there were 170 different variations. And what about the idea, the impression to the parents and the children that the children are now protected from indulging in dangerous behavior? And what about the book that it should be in every household, put out by the American Public Health Association? It's called Control of Communicable Diseases Manual, CCDM. Everyone should buy one of those books.
Mm-hmm. Comments, okay.
Yeah, thanks, Gene, for the call. So your points are a very good one. Until just a couple of months ago, the vaccine, there are 2 vaccines that are on the market. One covered just 2 viral strains, type 16 and type 18. These are the most important 2 for cervical and for head and neck cancer. So this HPV type 16, which is in all of the different vaccines, is responsible for 90 or 95% of the head and neck cancer. So there are a lot of different types of the papillomavirus. The vast majority of them have no bearing when it comes to the tonsils of the base of tongue. Recently, there's a vaccine out that covers an increasing number of strains. It covers 9 different strains, so that covers some of the other types that have been shown to cause both cervical and head and neck cancer. And they also cover the 2 types that are known to cause genital warts. As it relates to your second question, that has been, I think, one of the barriers to vaccination for some boys and girls, is that the sense is that with this vaccine that may somehow lead to more sexual activity or high risk behavior. When we've studied what are the barriers to vaccination, it seems that the practitioner's approach to the patient and the family is probably the most important component for getting the vaccinations to be higher. If they just present the vaccine as this is the normal vaccine that everyone should be getting at age 9, it's been shown to help prevent cancers, and present it in that fashion, the percent of patients who will be vaccinated has been shown to be much higher, so parents are more accepting. I think if you get into all of the details as it relates to sexual activities, there's going to naturally be some reluctance to think about, you know, a 9 or a 10-year-old undergoing these activities. But the sooner that your body can get the antibodies to these things, the better. And in fact, when studies have been done looking at the prevalence of this virus, even among people who reported having no sexual activity in their lives, some of these patients had been exposed to the virus. So while it is linked with sexual behaviors, there certainly are probably other ways that the virus can be communicated.
Again, Gene, thank you for calling. I want to give Jerry a chance. Jerry, hi. Do you have a quick question?
Yeah, I just want to make a quick comment and a quick question. My wife had been going to the doctor for several months. She was having trouble breathing, and they did heart studies, and they did all these other different things for several months until they kind of stumbled across, basically it was a tumor in her throat. Turned out to be cancerous. She has finished her treatments. She's still needing to do some tube feeding. She's 3 months out from her end of her treatments. Still a little bit of difficulty swallowing, nausea.
Yeah.
How long after treatments should we be seeing her be able to progress?
So how long? And unfortunately, we only have about 40 seconds or so.
What I would say is that the effects of chemotherapy and radiation, they don't stop on the last day of treatment, and they do persist for several months, and some of them persist even much longer than that. But if she's swallowing at all right now, that's a very positive sign, and encouraging her to do as much of that as she can safely is by far the best thing that she can do to exercise those muscles and to continue to regain a safe swallowing function.
Oh, that's good. So keep her at it, Jerry. Thank you so much for calling. And Dr. Whelan, thank you so much. Again, we got free head and neck cancer screening on April 17th at the University of Wisconsin Hospitals and Clinics. To go elsewhere to find someplace near you, go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We've got some links that will help you out. And thanks a lot for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.